There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Hannah Murray on TRE in the afternoon.
Joining us on the line now is Margie Goldsmith, an award-winning New York City-based adventure, luxury and lifestyle writer. Her latest book is her memoir, Becoming a Badass, From Fearful to Fierce. She speaks to anyone looking to overcome a sense of powerlessness in any given situation, whether that's a dysfunctional family, a marriage or relationship, or a career. Welcome to the show, Margie.
Thank you so much for having me, Hannah.
Oh, it's lovely to have you with us. And my goodness, what a life you've had.
This is so far. There's more to come.
Absolutely. I mean, starting from what sounds like a really traumatic and difficult childhood.
Yes, it was. Very much so. But I feel there are two ways to go when you're a survivor out of a childhood like that. Either you become a mess and you end up on drugs, or you become successful because you can't stand being in that horrible dysfunctional family. So you know you have to do whatever you can to get yourself out of there and move on with your life.
Yeah. So you managed to do that.
Yes. Well, actually, I escaped after college graduation, I went to Paris and just never came back. I stayed there for 4 years. And that way, you know, it was back in the day when long distance cost a lot of money and there was no internet and no cell phones. So to talk to someone in this country, either you spent a fortune on a long distance phone call or you had to send an airmail letter, which was perfect because then I didn't have to talk to my mother all the time.
And you lived quite a glamorous life in Paris.
Well, yes. I mean, first of all, the city itself is so glamorous and so beautiful. But when I got there, I did not like Paris. It was May. It was freezing. I just wore my raincoat all day. It poured. It was gray. I went into Notre Dame to look at the beautiful stained glass windows. They were almost black because it was so dark outside. And I was hoping some cute French boy would hit on me. No, it was they called them the pieds noirs, you know, the Algerians who go, psst, psst, missy, missy, you know, and I was so scared. And I was going to leave Paris. I toured around Europe for the summer, like a lot of Americans do after college graduation. And I thought, you know, there's got to be something wrong with me. I hated Paris so much. They keep writing all these love songs and books and poems. So I decided to stay till I learned what it meant to love Paris. So that was the beginning of my liberation away from my family, who only wanted me to get married. That was their idea of going to college, find a man, which I hadn't. So this was a perfect escape. I didn't have to talk to anyone.
Yeah. I'm dying to know what you did in Paris, because I kind of know what you mean. I've been to Paris a few times, and sometimes it can seem, you know, quite old and dirty, and you need to go to the right kind of places. And so much of when you visit somewhere is about the people that you meet as well. So what do you do? How did Paris change your mind?
Okay, well, first I went to Alliance Française, which I used to call Alliance Au Pair, because all the Swedish au pairs were learning their French at this school. And I used to walk around with my Herald Tribune in English, hidden inside Le Figaro, so everybody would think I was French. And what I did was I first learned the language. I had had an automobile accident, and I got a $1,500 settlement, which was enough, I knew, to get me for quite a while to stay in there. I found a $3 a night hotel, which was right on the Pont Neuf, so it was very cheap, and it included breakfast.
Wow.
And then I had been stage managing during the summers at Summer Stock. So I really wanted to go back into the theater because I hoped to write plays. But there was no American theater in France, but there was an American poetry reading. So I stage managed that, and that got me connected with the expat community. And finally, I learned about a job, which was dubbing foreign films into English. So that's the one where the lips go, blah, 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 you know, the lips keep moving and the voice says, yes, that kind of thing.
Brilliant.
But it was an introduction. And then I found a French, well, he was an American expat film director who was looking for an assistant. So now I had French. I could type very fast with a lot of errors. And he hired me as his creative assistant on movies. And that's how I learned my film trade. I ended up marrying him. He was 27 years older, but it didn't matter. This was France. This was Paris. Age didn't count. So I learned a lot from him, both about filmmaking and about life in general, because I had not been brought up with any kind of values. So when he said, you know, what are your values? I didn't know what he was talking about. Values, you know, he's got values. So that was the beginning.
Yeah, interesting. And you traveled so much throughout your life so far, visiting over 150 countries.
Yes.
Wonderful. Yes. Any highlights?
Well, you know, it's kind of like, who's your favorite child? I don't have a favorite, but I'm partial to Southeast Asia. I loved Bhutan, which is this tiny little, we used to be a kingdom, wedged in between China and India, where the people are so friendly. And I loved Kyoto and being in a ryokan in Japan. And I loved China and seeing the forbidden soldiers in Xi'an. And I just loved everything about Vietnam, where you would think they would hate us, but they have forgiven us. It's a beautiful country if you don't get killed trying to cross the street because there's so many motorbikes going on. And I loved Mongolia, which is the place of the wide open spaces. I had a riding instructor. He was 80 years old. I said, he's going to take me riding. And they said, no, you don't understand. He's the fastest rider in Mongolia. He just drove 80 horses in from 150 miles this morning. So this little toothless old man gets on his horse, I get on my horse. He takes a rope. We're tethered together. Our knees are touching. And we go, wham, riding across, galloping across the open plains. And about every 10 minutes or so, we'd run across a family who live in a ghare, which is like a felt tent, and they'd be laughing at the stupid American who's hanging on to dear life on her horse. But it was wonderful, and it was a great experience. Wow. So those are just a few of my favorite countries, not to mention Greenland and Iceland, and parts of America are just gorgeous, like the A1 Drive in California. And it's hard to stop. You get me started and I'm going to go through all 150. Oh. And I loved London and I love the Cotswolds.
So. Oh, fabulous. I mean, is there anywhere that you haven't been that's on your bucket list that you really want to see?
Well, the place I'm sorry I didn't get to earlier was the stands, Kazakhstan and Uzbekistan and Turkestan, because I've been told there's a lot of walking and I had a knee operation and it's the knee which refuses to heal, which is preventing me from going anywhere where you have to do a lot of walking. I mean, I've done marathons and triathlons and climbed mountains, but I can't even walk now. Oh. So I doubt I'll get there. But no, I'm happy with everywhere I've been. And I'm happy I got to Russia before this has become such a mess. Mm-hmm. I mean, Moscow is a beautiful city. And St. Petersburg, the Hermitage Museum, is magnificent. And
lovely.
I could go on and on, and I can't stop talking.
I'm happy listening to you. It's lovely. something else completely random. You went to Donald Trump's wedding to Maria Maples.
Yes, Marla Maples.
Oh,
yes.
Marla, well, sorry.
Trump was my husband number two, was a corporate lawyer. He was outside counsel to Trump. He was handling his bankruptcies at all the casinos in New Jersey. So we were invited, and I had never liked Trump, and I still don't. Now I really don't like him. Probably he'll try to have me killed for saying this on air. I don't
no,
care.
Don't say that.
We have freedom of speech so far. So he's getting married to Marla. It turns out she was 2 months pregnant, which is why he was marrying her. So he's sitting at the top. He's standing, you know, going from foot to foot, looking at his watch, being very irritated because he's not used to being kept waiting. And you've got all these superstars in the audience, like Barbara Walters and the Clintons and Jack Richardson. I mean, everybody, Nicholson, everybody was there. And finally, after 15 minutes, Marla comes down the aisle, and I was so happy she kept him waiting. It was a triumph. We also, on another trip, had to go on his helicopter with him to Atlantic City because there was a fight. I think it was Spinks versus Tyson. And I'm thinking, oh, my God, I hate fights. I don't want to sit through a fight. And because you're with Trump, you know you're going to be almost in the front row. And I just hated the whole idea. So we get escorted off the helicopter into all these limos. The whole road is closed for Trump. He's not even president then. I don't even think he's done the Celebrity Apprentice, but he's done this big deal to give himself a lot of PR. So now we get to the casino, and we're walking down the Taj, and people are reaching out, trying to touch him, because they think if they touch them, they'll become rich. Unfortunately, a lot of people still feel that in our country, that he's going to make them rich. So that was bad enough. But then we have to sit in these seats, and we're 2 feet away from the boxers. And I'm thinking, oh, my God, how long does each round take? When can I get out of here? And after 90 seconds, I guess Spinks knocked Tyson out or vice versa. I don't remember. The fight was over. Oh, and everybody's going, it's fixed, it's fixed. And I've never been so happy in my life that we were able to get out of there. Another time I interviewed him for a magazine article. He still wasn't president. By then he had Celebrity Apprentice. And my tape recorder wouldn't work. So I knew it would work if I plugged it in. So I've been escorted into his office, and I'm on the ground on all fours looking for an outlet to plug in the tape recorder. When he walks in, he goes, what are you doing? And I said, I'm plugging in my tape recorder. And he goes, why? I never heard of a journalist who has to plug in a tape recorder. Everybody uses batteries. I think it's the first time I thought on my feet. I said, you know what? I wouldn't want to take a chance on losing an interview with you because the batteries died. He goes, all journalists should be required to use outlets. So I got out of it.
Oh, goodness. Wow, how weird. And were you shocked when he became president then? Were you thinking, how on earth has this man got to this job?
I'm still thinking that. I think we all are. And now he's in New York City because the Security Council of the UN is meeting. So if you hear a noise, it's helicopters flying over because I'm only about 8 blocks from the UN. Or if you hear sirens, it's because he's passing through.
Oh, brilliant. And you've had a long career as a journalist, interviewing all kinds of celebrities and sports people. And any highlights that you can tell us about that, other than Trump, obviously?
I think Francis Ford Coppola was a dream. He was so smart and so engaging. And all their PR people, you know, they say, you have 30 minutes with him and then we're hanging up on you. So the 30 minutes goes by and I go blah, 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 with my questions to make sure I get everything in. And I say, well, okay, I think I have it all. And he goes, don't you want to ask me anything else? And I'm thinking, what about the PR person standing guard? And I said, yes, I would love to. So we talked another 45 minutes.
Oh,
it was wonderful.
I love that.
Same thing with Harry Connick Jr., whose publicist said, no, you have 20 minutes with him. And I said, I can't do a feature in 20 minutes. She said, well, you'll have to. So I get up there into his suite. He's got a cold. He's wearing a baseball hat. He's unshaven. He was so nice. And after the 20 minutes, he goes, Do you want to ask me anything else? And she pops in her head. I said, I would love to ask you other things. And she closes the door behind her angrily. And we stayed another 35 minutes. So he was wonderful. And there's a football player you've probably never heard of named Larry Fitzpatrick. I don't really follow him in sports. He was a wide end receiver for the Arizona football team. And he told me he had gone back to college. He was about 35 because he had promised his mother he would go to college. So he went to school online while he was playing football. And that was very moving.
Yeah.
So they're all great in a different way. I've interviewed Branson twice. He's very, very smart. And it's, you know, what more could you ask for than to be able to talk to these wonderful people? I did an interview last week with Gordon Ramsay.
Oh,
and
wow.
I expected him to be the way he comes across on TV. I said, Gordon, I mean, are you really like this or is this just a persona? You want people to think you're mean. And he said, well, look, you know, you've got thousands of hours of footage that you're editing together and you have to keep it interesting or people aren't going to look at it. So it is, you know, just all show and tell for him. He couldn't be sweeter or nicer.
Oh, that's so lovely. And so are you kind of freelance? Do you do interviews for different magazines and newspapers and things now? How does it work?
I freelance, but I've got a few steady gigs. And in between those gigs, I'm always writing. I mean, I've been working on this memoir now since COVID.
Wow.
And it's finally coming out, which I'm very excited about because I'm hoping to inspire people to not sit around and think someday I'm going to do this, because most people never do. You know, they say, oh, I'm going to go on safari one day. They don't. I'm going to study Spanish one day. They don't. I think I'll learn how to play tennis or pickleball. They don't. I mean, most people just talk about what they're going to do someday. And because I've had so many years of experience, I'm probably twice as old as you. I've been around a while and I've learned that, you know, you don't wait for it to happen. This is it. This we're all just going through once. And so you have to do everything you can. So, yeah, I waste a lot of dumb time watching dumb movies on Netflix and ridiculous things like Below Deck, which I watched during lunch.
Oh, I love Below Deck.
I do, too. I do, too. It's my drug of choice during lunch. And it's always the same. There are two things I like. When they get the tip, I want to know how much it is.
Yeah.
And I like watching the passengers. I don't care about all the backstage romances. It's boring.
Yeah.
But the passengers are always obnoxious.
Yeah.
But
it's shocking how rude some of them are, isn't it? It really
is. I know. Oh, incredible. Incredible.
Do you have a favorite captain? Do you watch all the different Below Decks?
I like them all. I like Captain Sandy, yeah. And I like, God, what's, I can, the one who had a cane, I'm having a blank on his
Captain
name.
Captain Lee?
Yeah, Captain Lee.
Yeah, he's lovely.
Yeah,
they're all great. I agree. And you talk about in the book all the, not just travels, but all the real physical challenges that you've done, all the mountain climbs and incredible things. What was Everest like? I mean, I don't know how you can sum that up quickly, but...
Let's put it this way. It was very, very scary. They made us wear helmets. We had to have ice axes. So that's what you self-arrest with if you're going to fall. We didn't need them because we were on trails. But at one point, we had to cross a frozen lake. And there was a yak train ahead of us. And that means a batch of yaks, huge yaks carrying stuff on their backs. And the yaks refused to cross the lake. That's how scared the yaks were. They knew that this lake could just give way. So our safety instructor, guide, said, follow in my footsteps and do not diverge from exactly where I put my foot. And I'd never seen him so scared. So, of course, we were all scared. We did make it across the lake. And the further up the mountain we got, the scarier it was, because you have the owners of the yak trains and they'll just go into your tent and steal things if you're not careful. So we had to zipper down our tents and be careful. And you're so out of breath all the time. Even this 18-year-old super athlete was having so much trouble. Everybody had their day of being altitude sick. And they said, don't get altitude sick, because if you do, we're going to have to get you down the mountain. And I don't know what the name of that thing is. They pump air into your lungs as they're driving you to Kathmandu, which is the nearest place with a hospital. And that's a 12-hour drive. So... It was scary, but it was fun. Every time we'd keep climbing and someone would be coming down. And I'd say, did you summit? Did you summit? Well, most of them hadn't. So I stopped saying it because you could see how disappointed they were.
Their faces of no, no, we didn't. No, no.
Exactly.
Oh, wow. Exactly. So how do you feel now the book is out there and you finished it?
The book is now available for pre-publication, and it's coming out September 30th, wherever you buy your books, or you can pre-order it now. And I'm feeling really good. Just before we got on this phone call, I started signing books because I'm having my launch party next Tuesday, which is September 30th. And I don't want to just have to sit at a desk. I want to be able to talk to my friends. So I've pre-signed the books, which is the hardest thing. And I'm excited about it because I'm hoping it'll change a lot of people's lives. I mean, there's one issue we haven't talked about at all, and that's that I've had some cancer scares. First, I had stage 4 pancreatic cancer. I was sure I was going to die. And then I had it again. They cut out part of my pancreas. Then they took out my whole pancreas. And then a year after that, I had lung cancer. Well, I'm still playing blues harmonica. You know, so if you just keep walking the hallways, just, you know, motion is everything. I hate this term, motion is lotion. I prefer move it or lose it. But you can heal from anything if you just keep moving and keep a good attitude. It just makes all the difference. So you don't have to have had cancer or any other serious disease to read my book. But if you want to be a badass, you have to just keep challenging yourself. I think it all started the first time I ever saw a Nike ad. It was in a magazine and it had a big, huge, just do it with a tiny little figure in a yellow parka in the middle of a gigantic green rainforest. And that just hit me back in 1972. And since then, I've been trying to just do it.
Love that. Well, it's been really great to chat with you, Margie Goldsmith. Thank you so much for joining us. And if listeners want to get a copy of Becoming a Badass from Fearful to Fierce, it's available on our website for pre-order, tre.radio. Margie, thank you so much and keep doing what you're doing.
Hannah, thank you so much. It's been wonderful.
Bye-bye.
And have a great day.
You too.
At Ability Chiropractic, we believe every child deserves to grow up healthy, strong, and connected to the incredible power within their own body. From infants to adults, our doctors specialize in purposeful chiropractic care that restores balance between the brain and body, helping you and your family live and heal the way you were designed to, naturally. Families across Columbus are choosing to build lifelong wellness from the start. Discover what true health feels like at Ability Chiropractic. Schedule your visit today at abilitychiro.com.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.